Chapter 11. The Air Canada jet skimmed high over Ontario, the landscape below appearing like a green patchwork comforter from the tiny first-class windows. Clay Zack was oblivious to the view, focusing instead on the shapely legs of a young flight attendant pushing a drinks cart. She caught his stare and brought over a martini in a plastic cup. "Last one I can serve you," she said with a perky smile. "We'll be landing in Toronto shortly."
"I'll savor it all the more," he replied with a leer.
Dressed in the traveling businessman's uniform of khaki slacks and a blue blazer, he looked like just another sales manager headed to an off-site conference. The reality was quite different. The only child of an alcoholic single mother, he'd grown up in a ragtag section of Sudbury, Ontario, with little guidance. At 15, he'd dropped out of school to work in the nearby nickel mines, developing the physical strength that he still carried 20 years later. His life as a miner was short-lived, however, when he committed his first murder, driving a pickaxe into the ear of a fellow miner who'd taunted his family lineage. Fleeing Ontario, he assumed a new identity in Vancouver and drifted into the drug trade. His strength and toughness were put to use as an enforcer for a major local methamphetamine trafficker named the Swede. The money came easily, but Zack treated it with an unusual intelligence. A self-taught man, he read voraciously and judiciously studied business and finance. Rather than blowing his ill-gotten gains on flashy women and exotic cars like his cohorts did, he shrewdly invested in stocks and real estate. His lucrative drug career, however, was cut short in an ambush. It wasn't the police, but a Hong Kong supplier looking to expand control of the market. The Swede and his escorts were gunned down during a nighttime deal in Vancouver's rambling Stanley Park. Zack managed to duck the fire and disappear unscathed into a maze of hedges. He bided his time for revenge, spending weeks staking out a luxury yacht leased by the Chinese syndicate, setting off a timed explosive charge. Using knowledge gleaned from his days in the nickel mines, he blew up the boat with all of the Hong Kong associates aboard. Watching from a small speedboat as the fireball erupted, he saw a man on an adjacent yacht get thrown into the water by the concussion. Realizing the authorities would spend little time investigating the death of a known drug dealer, but might expand the dragnet if a wealthy socialite was an added victim, he quickly sped over and fished the unconscious man out of the water. When a sputtering Mitchell Goyette came to, his gratitude was uncharacteristically effusive.
"You saved my life," he coughed. "I will reward you for that."
"Give me a job instead," Zack said.
Zack enjoyed a huge laugh when he reminded Goyette of the whole story years later. Even Goyette conceded the humor in it. By then, the mogul had come to admire the subversive talents of the former miner, employing him as a high-level enforcer once again. But Goyette knew Zack's loyalty was based solely on cash, and he always kept a wary eye on him. For his part, Zack enjoyed being the lone wolf. He had influence with Goyette, and while he enjoyed the compensation, he also enjoyed tweaking his rich and powerful employer. The plane landed at Toronto's Lester B. Pearson International Airport a few minutes ahead of schedule. Shaking off the effect of the in-flight martinis, Zack stepped out of the first-class compartment and headed to the rental car counter while waiting for his bags to unload. Taking the keys to a beige four-door sedan, he drove south, skirting the western shoreline of Lake Ontario. Cruising the lakefront expressway for another 70 miles, he exited at a sign reading Niagara. A mile below the famous falls, he crossed the Rainbow Bridge and entered the state of New York, handing the immigration officer a phony Canadian passport. Turning past the falls, it was just a short drive south to Buffalo. He found the city airport in plenty of time to catch a half-empty 767 to Washington, D.C., flying under yet another assumed name, this time with a phony American identification. Dusk had fallen as the jet crossed over the Potomac River on its final approach to Reagan National Airport. It was Zack's first time in the nation's capital, and he duly stared at the city's monuments from the back of a cab. Watching the blinking red lights atop the Washington Monument, he idly wondered if George would have deemed the towering obelisk an absurdity. Checking in at the Mayflower Hotel, he perused the file that Goyette had given him, then rode the elevator down to the wood-paneled Town and Country Lounge on the lobby floor. Finding a quiet corner booth, he ordered a martini and checked his watch. At 7:15, a thin man with an unkempt beard approached the table.
"Mr. Jones?"
he asked, eyeing Zack nervously. Zack gave the man a weak smile.
"Yes, please sit down," Zack replied. "I'm Hamilton. Bob Hamilton, from the GWU Environmental Research and Technology Lab," the man said quietly.
He stared at Zack with trepidation, then took a deep breath and slid tentatively into the booth.